Hello everyone. Welcome back to TTT, the Talking Transformation Podcast, brought to you by Tumi. Today, we invite you to explore the intersection of urban planning and gender equity, with a special focus on the mobility of care. In this episode, our colleague Yulia speaks to renowned expert Inés Sánchez de Madariaga, who introduced the concept of mobility of care. As an influential researcher and expert at the Universidad Politécnica de Madrid, Inés focuses on integrating this concept into urban transportation systems to create more inclusive and equitable cities. The mobility of care is an analytical category to highlight trips made for caregiving. These trip purposes are typically hidden in other categories such as shopping. With her work, Inés counteracts a male bias in mobility data and uncovers the true travel patterns of women around the world. Join us as Inés shares her insights on why mobility of care is vital for urban planning and how to measure its impact. Stay tuned to learn how urban planning is evolving to reflect the diversity of all residents. Now let's dive into the interview.
Okay, welcome everyone to this interview with Inés Sánchez de Madariaga. We are speaking about the mobility of care today, as you heard in the intro. Welcome, Inés.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be talking to you today.
Great. First of all, I would like to ask you, maybe for our listeners who are not familiar, what is the mobility of care and why is it an important category when we determine trip purposes and measuring mobility?
Well, the mobility of care is an umbrella category for trip, for travel purposes that I developed over 15 years ago as a result of a research project I did for the Spanish Ministry of Transport. Originally, the ministry had asked me to analyze from a gender perspective the key transportation data sets that were existing in Spain at the time on urban transport and mobility, and to identify possible sources of gender biases and ways to improve, generally speaking, the data from a gender perspective. So I did that. I found a number of gender biases and omissions. And then after a while, this was like this idea that came to me, that in fact, when you look at the categorization of the purposes for travel that are pretty standard in any transportation agency around the world, which quite normally it's like employment, education, shopping, leisure, and then maybe visiting, strolling, other, and escorting. So what came to my mind was that this way of categorizing was gender biased because it separate in small categories that looked as they were not important, trips that when you look from a gender point of view, really could be categorized as trips that are done for the purposes of what gender scholarship calls care. Care is understood as the tasks carried out by adult persons for the upkeep of the home and the caring of others. So the trips that people do for shopping, many of them, strolling, visiting, escorting, and many in the other box, are really trips that people do for what we would call care purposes. So I had this idea of creating an umbrella category that would allow to make visible and quantify all the trips that people do for the upkeep of the home and the care of people who cannot move autonomously in the city.
From a researcher perspective, though, how do you really go about measuring the mobility of care? I saw that you have a fairly recent paper that discusses how to use new data-driven approaches that is more quantitative data, actually. So maybe you can share a little bit about how you can measure this category.
Well, you know that research on women and transportation had for many decades, since the late 70s, been identifying trips made by women and trips made for specific purposes. So what is new about my research is this idea of creating a term that allows to separate the trips that can relate or are motivated by care purposes from trips that are related to employment or for personal or leisure purposes, so that you understand really what's the weight among all all the trips that people do independently of their gender for the purposes of care. So how do you measure that? This depends on the data sets. I think the best way to measure it is by designing specifically designed service, because you need to set the questions right, and you need to brief the people who is doing the interview and the people who are responding to the interview, so that you can separate the trips that people do for leisure or for personal purposes from trips that people do for caring for others and the upkeep of the home. So to separate all these trips. And so you need pretty detailed questions. So that would be like the best way to measure it, specifically designed service. This is what we have applied in the case of Madrid. We have also applied it in the case of Nairobi. We have designed one of those questionnaires specifically for the transit system in Buenos Aires. But there are other ways that you can approximate this measurement. For instance, we have done recently in a collaboration project with MIT and the Washington Transit Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, using artificial intelligence data mining applied to all the many millions of data coming from the use of their transit cards. But of course, this is using a lot of data, but the information that you get from this data, you need to see what are the biases and how you can get an approximate measurement of certain trips. So it's not as accurate or as specific as if you really design a specific transit. Of course, other ways that you can, other source of data that can be used are data from cell phones, but each set of data has its own biases and limitations. And this is what is important to understand.
It's really, that was new to me, that you also need to brief people answering the questionnaires that, so that they know what they are answering.
About what is done for love or what is done for caring as an obligation and duty. So people, particularly older women, who do, many of them do, particularly in certain cultures, like Mediterranean cultures or more traditional cultures, elderly, more older women think that this is a normal thing to do and it's done for love. So they wouldn't consider it something that is done as a duty. So it's important to brief the person who is doing the questionnaire, and that this person also is able to make it clear how the question is presented to the interviewee.
Mm-hmm. Interesting point, yeah. And then I would like to ask you, some transport planners, and I spoke to some of them in German cities because of my thesis, argue that planning for all transport users in the same way includes the or serves the mobility requirements of women without any specific focus on or consideration of gender. What would you respond to people who are a little bit hesitant to apply a concept like the mobility of care?
Well, the mobility of care, I would call this category of trip purpose as a gender indicator, because it measures an activity that relates to gender tasks independently of whether it's men or women who perform it. But then we also have sex disaggregated data, and we know what trips are made by women and what trips are made by men. We also have, for instance, in the survey that we did in Madrid, we found that the gender gap between men and women for care purposes was enormous. Men do very, very few of these care trips. So we have the evidence, the empirical evidence in sex disaggregated data show us that the travel behavior is very different, that travel needs are very different, that the trips, the travel patterns are very different between men and women. And we also see how this overlaps with a gender indicator such as is mobility of care, because we see that most care trips are done by women with a very big gender gap. So that's the reality. Of course, we have to distinguish what is the reality, what happens, the empirical evidence, and what is like the normative, what do we want to go, and on what we would like to respond better to those trips so that we reduce gender inequalities in access to urban space and urban services. So I think that the data really show that men and women have very, very different travel patterns, and that the mobility of care-related tasks is one such key area in which travel patterns are very different between men and women.
So it seems a bit tricky. How can we highlight the fact that globally, you know, care work is mostly carried out by women, while at the same time not reproducing a gendered narrative of who should take on these tasks, or, you know, just serving sort of, what's the difference between serving these trips and upkeeping the status quo versus actually working to make it more equitable for women and men and everybody else?
Yes. Well, the reality is that it is women who do these trips around the world. Whether they do it as working women who work in paid employment and also take most of these care-related trips for their own family, or as paid caregivers in the private or private sector, as happens in the developing world, for instance, in Colombia, we know that the greatest source of employment for women is domestic work, employment. So they do lots of these trips, but because as employment, because they are domestic workers. So we have this evidence, and the evidence is overwhelming. So the reality is that if we do develop policies that reduce the load that these kind of trips have on those kind of trips, we are benefiting women, particularly because it's women who are doing those trips. So we are maybe in the future, when the weight of transportation in these tasks and other issues that influence this part of the labor market and of the tasks that are done on a daily basis for the maintenance of life, this can be done with less inequality and less difficulty. This will surely influence the fact that men do more of it. It will contribute to reduce inequality, because the fact is, that's the reality is what we have. It's the empirical evidence. And if we want to have greater equality, we have to address this. We have to recognize that these tasks have to be performed. And whether it's men or women who perform it, the reality of these trips has to be addressed by transportation systems.
Yeah, and speaking of solutions and addressing these trips, can you maybe tell us a hands-on example of what that could look like for, let's say, a transport provider?
Well, it depends on what kind of transport provider we're talking about. I think there are several areas of intervention. One is policy, the policy of fair pricing, and how you can set specific pricing mechanisms that have an impact on facilitating women's access to transportation, because we know that women have less economic resources than men. So acting on pricing is a very important aspect. The second one, acting on amenity and safety. And this includes the design of train stations, of subway stops, where they are located, how they are convenient, not convenient, clean, the lighting, the presence of other persons. So everything that impacts on safety and amenity. And this is for providers. Then another one is the participation of women in the transportation labor force, having women among the people who are there as workers. And this, of course, requires also acting on safety and also on conciliation of personal and professional life, which is particularly different in a sector like transportation, which has specific manifestation of gender violence, and conciliation with family life. It have to be specifically addressed. Finally, I would say another key issue is the patterns of the infrastructure of the services and the regularity and the reliability of the service. If a bus service is not reliable and you don't know when it's going to pass, what time you're going to be arriving in places, that's a key thing. So improving transfers and reliability. And then the pattern, the spatial pattern of the services, the bus routes, and the capillarity of other sources of collective railway systems. That's another key area. Because, you know, for instance, in countries in which domestic employment is a key source of employment for women, this means going from a poor residential neighborhood in the periphery, probably, to a rich or at least upper middle income neighborhood. And normally transit and transportation services are designed to arrive to employment places, not from residential to residential. So those trips are really long and very difficult to make. and very dangerous too in many occasions.
Yeah, that makes sense. Wow, great. Thank you for that insight. When we speak about these types of solutions or also either implementation or in terms of data, how much progress have you seen since coining this term in, I believe, 2008 until today?
Yes, well, I've seen that this is now a topic in the academic and the policy conversation. When I first spoke about care in cities and transportation, which was in the early 2000s, because the idea of the mobility of care was part of a greater understanding of urban planning that takes care tasks into consideration, of city planning, of where you locate buildings in space, what is city planning in relation to transportation. So I think I was probably the first person who spoke about care as part of planning and transportation. Gender research in city planning had been analyzing, had not been using this concept before. So when I first spoke it about care in the city and care in transportation, it was totally new. And now it's talked about in many parts of the world. It's been, for instance, in Latin America. It was introduced by the Inter-American Development Bank. They invited me to a conference in 2015. Then I was invited to a conference in Bogota. And after that, very few years, the concept started to be used by governments in Mexico and in Bogota. In Mexico City, in the state of Jalisco, it's now integrated into the legislation, the transportation legislation. In Bogota, they have these programs on blocks of care, which includes mobility of care. And it's being used by many researchers in universities in many continents and in many forums, for instance, in India, which you mentioned, Udesha. And in a couple of weeks, I will be going to Manila for the Asian Development Bank. So it's also been used by the World Bank, by the European Commission, by the Organization for Economic Development, OECD, the OECD in Africa, by UN Habitat in Nairobi. So it's now it's a concept that has gained some kind of success, and many people are using it as a useful way of understanding what's happening in terms of transportation in cities.
So you said that you recently spoke at Udesha conference in Delhi, which was organized by WRI India in partnership with Women Mobilize Women and other great organizations. How did you experience now the discourse and the experience of transport and policy experts on the ground? Was there anything that surprised you about the conversations you had there?
Well, the first thing I noticed, which is something I expected, is that safety is one key issue in India. I think it's a key issue in lots of parts of the developing world because cities, many parts of cities, many sections of cities are still very unsafe. So it's a key thing, safety. So it was like a big part of what was being discussed. But then there was something that really struck me and I brought with me to think about, which is the fact that buses are free for women in India. So the fact that women can ride buses free has had a very positive impact in improving women's access to education. And of course, India has very, very big cities. Women have a very low integration in the labor force, which has decreased significantly after the pandemic. And it's not like 19%. I guess there are ways, different ways of counting this, and probably there's a lot of informal employment, which is not included here. I don't know that. But I think that what this kind of policy can impact in specific contexts and settings where transportation is of so difficult access, because I noticed that in parallel to the fact that there were so many motorbikes in India, but of course, no woman was riding a motorbike. So motorbikes are an important means of transportation for people who cannot afford a car. And also the subway is pretty expensive. So only middle class people can use it, can afford it. So buses remain the way for women to move. The fact that they are free, it's a key incentive for women to improve their life prospects in terms of education, employment, and all sorts of ways of accessing urban services. So I found that thinking at how gratuity or big kinds of public funding of services can be important policy tools for specific circumstances, and that this experience deserves looking at it more carefully and to see how it can be adapted, translatable. For instance, I would say in certain rural settings for women, in which women are older, they don't drive, things are very far away, they have low incomes, they cannot afford taxis, no other sort of public transportation. It's a similar, very different apparently, but similar problems. So I found this an interesting thing to look at, very inspiring for me.
Yeah, it's a great scheme, and it's great to see the positive response that it has gotten already. So I would like to ask you two more questions. Are there any misconceptions of the mobility of care that remain?
Well, yes, I'm seeing that because it has had this success in terms of many people who are talking about it in academia. I am reading some people who are suggesting, who are commenting on it. And for instance, I am reading some people who say, well, if we consider that care, who look at care in applying a philosophical lens from philosophers who have made a theoretical construction of care as an ethical view of the world, and they are translating this philosopher's positioning to the transportation, I think in a rather maybe too literal way, but I'm thinking about what I'm reading. So for instance, I've read some people who say, what if care for personal care should also be care? I explicitly had said personal care, we put it out because we want to measure care for others and care for the household, not personal care. So these people are saying, well, personal care is also care. And I had said the opposite. So something to think about. Other people are saying, looking at indigenous communities, where very poor women from indigenous settings in some places in Latin America, who under the pandemic needed to go out to make some money to bring food to their families. And I read this article in which they said, well, this looking for getting some source of income to be able to feed is a way of care. Well, I think this needs to be thought a bit more thoroughly, because in a more traditional understanding, this would be an economic activity. But maybe in an indigenous setting, this is not properly work, because it's how do you get something to eat when you are in such circumstances? Maybe some exchange, some bartering, some, I don't know. So I think that extending the concept to different contexts and sets of populations might make us think of how we conceptualize, how this idea that I built on a first world context in Europe might have to have or could have some sort of adaptations in other contexts. But also maybe some of these adaptations might be going too far in applying what are ethical philosophical constructions, which maybe can be like overextending the concept of care, and so that it implies more than it should. So I'm thinking about these things now, reading all these other publications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for everyone out there, there's still a great deal to be researched in the context of mobility of care. That's also a motivating message on one hand. And what you spoke about reminded me that I think one of the key contributions also of the mobility of care is that it really gives us a better understanding that care work does not necessarily mean that the people doing it keep in the house, and that in some contexts it is very much that people don't leave the house much and their mobility is very limited. But in other contexts, it actually means that they have many trips that are taking a long time. So I think it helps understand that part, that it's not always just like housework is in the house, or, you know, I think that's a great point as well. And then, yeah, and lastly, I would just like to ask you what would you like to see more of in transport planning?
Well, I think that from this lens of care and gender, we need to like to understand on the one hand what are the tasks related to care and gender roles and what they imply in the transportation system and use and provision, and also on mobility and immobility, the impossibility of going to places, because immobility is a big thing for many women around the world, and how this interacts with men and women. And then I think that looking at all these tasks and their implications for transportation and mobility. But then we also need to understand that the people who do these trips do them from a different standpoint. And with this, I mean that because the use of words can be misleading, because words don't mean exactly the same thing in different places. For instance, when you talk about caregiving in the US, they immediately think about old people nursing homes. So caregiving for them is taking care of the elderly, which is not at all what care means in feminist scholarship. it's more related to health and aging. So we need to be careful with words when we speak in different contexts. But what I'm referring is that we need to see what are the different profiles or realities of the people who do those trips, because it's not the same when it is done professionally as work in the caregiving industry, as a worker in caregiving would be doing in, for instance, in Scandinavian countries. People who work in the nursing industry, in the old people nursing or childcare industries as public services, or are private or as private services in the UK or in countries where those services are mostly provided privately. This is different from when people do them while working mainly in a normal job, in any kind of economic activity, or in more traditional societies where still some women are only housewives and do that as their main activity. So these different overall contexts in which people perform care activities within their different key employment related and activity, whether it's in care or not in care or not employment at all, has to be looked at now. I don't think this kind of research is yet being done. Well, I've read one article done in Canada about that, about the people who have another job and work. What is their care mobility? That's one specific article I've read that addresses this issue for this particular set of the population. And then I've read another one in Bogota and another one in Turkey about women who are domestic workers in the informal economy. So those are two subsets, but they are not the only ones. So I think that more research needs to be done that explicitly addresses these different realities of the people who do these trips. Different countries, different kind of urban settings and so on.
That's a great ending message. Then, thank you, Ines, for speaking to me for Talking Transport Transformation today. It has been a lovely and enlightening conversation, and thank you very much for coming on. And I wish you all the best and keep doing what you're doing. We're all watching with excitement.
Thank you. Thank you to you. It's been a wonderful conversation, and thank you for inviting me. I wish you lots of luck too with your work.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this enlightening episode of Talking Transport Transformation. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Ines Sanchez de Madariaga and gain valuable insights into the mobility of care. If you found this discussion inspiring, be sure to subscribe to our podcast for more episodes on sustainable and just mobility. Feel free to share your thoughts and feedback with us on social media or via info@transformative-mobility.org. Until next time.